It's Monday, June 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the impact of a landmark Supreme Court ruling on gay marriage is still being felt across the United States.
There are red lines that we cannot cross, and some very difficult decisions, tough choices are going to have to be made by all of us if we're going to get to this deal over the next few days.
Iran says it may not be able to complete a nuclear deal by tomorrow's deadline. Also ahead, a devastating fire burns through a party at a water park in Taiwan. Heat is also the enemy in Pakistan. And we go to the movies with David Byrd. It's all on today's International Edition. Friday's Supreme Court decision legalizing same-sex marriage throughout the United States is an outcome few thought possible just years ago, and it shows a nation increasingly tolerating and even celebrating the hopes and aspirations of gay people. VOA's Michael Bowman joins us to consider this landmark ruling along with a decision on health care, the so-called Obamacare law.
Some would say that this has been the best week for progressives in a very, very, very long time, because on two consecutive days you had rulings that very much went in the favor of President Barack Obama and a lot of the people who support him. The Supreme Court upheld the federal subsidies under the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There was a challenge, and those who got subsidies under federally run exchanges might have lost them had the Supreme Court not affirmed that those subsidies could continue. And then 24 hours later, something that arguably really changes the social fabric of the country. Instead of a patchwork of laws where gay people could be married in some states and not in others, the ruling came down from the Supreme Court that marriage is a fundamental right and that gay people have a constitutional right to wed if they wish.
And that's something that had been a bit of a division on Capitol Hill for some time. What has been the reaction that you've heard?
Well, it hasn't just been a division on Capitol Hill. It's been both of these questions have really divided the American public into very distinct camps. The reaction among conservatives was bitter disappointment on Thursday and bitter disappointment yet again on Friday. There was the thought that in both of these rulings that the court overstepped its bounds. As for the Affordable Care Act, in a really blistering dissent, arguably the most conservative justice on the court, Antonin Scalia accused the court of having engineered a judicial putsch, sort of a judicial coup.
Right.
In his dissent on same-sex marriage, Chief Justice Roberts said that the court had usurped the powers of the legislature. And he made an argument that it really wasn't in the best interests of gay people to have this argument settled by a court, that in effect the democratic process had been short-circuited, and that without that continuing dialogue, that there would never be real societal acceptance of same-sex couples as a thing in the country.
This is more of a generational shift with same-sex marriage, and despite this ruling, hurdles to overcome.
The gay community would point out that now same-sex marriage is legal nationwide, but there are many states where someone can be fired simply if an employer finds out that he or she is gay. This is not the end of the gay rights movement, but this is a very significant chapter. This is something that the gay rights movement fought for years. And some would argue that it represents, in a sense, a quest just to be normal, just like everybody else. And as some have put it, they want to be just as miserable as every other married couple in America. I wouldn't go so far as to editorialize that way.
That's a personal decision to be miserable, I guess.
Right. But I do think that I do think that it's interesting.
Michael Bowman is our correspondent on Capitol Hill on the Senate side for all things political. He's on our side. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jim.
2 days after the Supreme Court ruling, supporters of gay marriage in the United States and around the world are still flooding Twitter with messages of support. Michael Lippin is here to tell us more. Michael, what are they saying?
Well, you know, by far the most popular hashtag for them has been Love Wins, which Twitter has encouraged by automatically displaying a rainbow flag in the shape of a heart whenever someone includes that hashtag in a tweet. The Topsy Analytics site shows that hashtag Love Wins has been used more than 500,000 times in the past day and almost 7 million times in the past week. And those are really enormous numbers for any hashtag. You know, today, many gay marriage supporters have been focused on gay pride parades being held around the U.S. and overseas. Those events, of course, have been particularly festive given the U.S. Supreme Court decision on Friday. U.S. media say hundreds of thousands of people have been attending gay pride parades here in the States on Sunday, and one of the biggest has been taking place in New York City. The New York event also has been one of the top five trending items on Twitter today, with many people using the hashtag NYCPride2015.
Well, how have U.S. opponents of gay marriage been expressing themselves on social media?
Well, you know, they certainly haven't been shy in expressing their disappointment with the Supreme Court ruling and in reaffirming their beliefs that marriage is still a union of one man and one woman. Their most popular Twitter hashtag has been hashtag 1M1W, as in the numeral 1 followed by the letter M and then the numeral 1 followed by W. But it's only been used a few thousand times in recent days. By and large, gay marriage opponents have been making themselves heard on Facebook, leaving comments on pages of groups like the U.S. National Organization for Marriage. Now, that group posted a photo of a bride and groom kissing, superimposed with this message: traditional marriage, God ordained it, nature reveals it, science affirms it. Another place where gay marriage opponents have been sharing their views is the Facebook page of Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee, who's been one of the strongest conservative critics of the Supreme Court decision. He's been posting a series of messages in recent days on his ideas for overturning the ruling and defending traditional marriage, Jim.
Well, a lot of opposing views, different views on social media. Michael Lippin, thanks for bringing them to us. And you can follow Michael on Twitter, by the way, at Michael_Lippin. This is VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
You're listening to International Edition. Iran nuclear negotiators have indicated that they are unlikely to make their June 30th deadline because the components for a final agreement are not in place. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins is following discussions in Vienna.
Monsieur Fabius.
With the original June 30th deadline just on the horizon, Iran nuclear negotiators have indicated a number of key issues remain unresolved. French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius says several conditions are needed to get a robust agreement, including verification of suspected nuclear sites. Britain's foreign minister says no deal is better than a bad deal.
There are red lines that we cannot cross, and some very difficult decisions, tough choices, are going to have to be made by all of us if we're going to get to this deal over the next few days.
And Iran's foreign minister says a good deal needs to include immediate sanctions relief.
All of the sanctions, economic and financial sanctions, need to be removed immediately. And sanctions, Security Council sanctions, must also be terminated immediately.
But world powers favor phased relief in exchange for a deal that would restrict Tehran's ability to make nuclear weapons. That comprehensive agreement appears less likely by the end of the month.
We will, as we've said, likely take some additional days after June 30th, like we did in Lausanne when we finalized the parameters in April, to get the strongest possible deal we can.
Some officials say the more significant deadline here in Vienna is actually July 9th. That is when the mandatory congressional review period would extend from 30 to 60 days. But extending talks beyond June could be problematic, says analyst Emanuele Ottolenghi.
The problem is that the recent experience tells us that every extension has actually brought more concessions in favor of the Iranian side of these negotiations.
It's a question of striking a balance, says nuclear policy analyst General James Cartwright.
You want to give Iran the ability to protect its sovereignty, but you also want to have some sort of protocol that allows us to go in if there is any reasonable doubt that a covert activity would be going on there.
He says if negotiators can get a deal that provides sufficient oversight of fuel cycles and the potential for a covert breakout, it should be a good agreement that will put the region in a better place. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, Vienna.
More than 500 people have been sent to hospitals in Taiwan with burns after a fire broke out at a water park party late Saturday. Authorities say that blaze started when powder intended for festive lighting was accidentally ignited near the party stage. Ralph Jennings has the story for VOA in Taipei.
An explosion of colored theatrical powder in a Taipei suburb late Saturday touched off a fire along the ground of the Formosa Fun Coast, a water theme park where about 1,000 people were gathered for a privately organized party called Color Play Asia. A new Taipei City Fire Department official said most of the 516 who were reported hurt suffered burns to their lower bodies. Taiwan Premier Mao Zhirguo told reporters Sunday the priority was to ensure the victims had proper medication. Local media said 8 had life-threatening injuries. Mr. Mao says that due to the scale and rather large number of injured, everyone's focus is on medication, especially skin treatment. He adds that after an initial inventory, the quantity of medical resources is not a problem. Local media images showed paramedics and bystanders carrying burn victims out of the water park late Saturday night on inflatable rafts. At hospitals around Taipei, burn victims and relatives expressed sorrow as well as anger. 2 foreigners and 4 people from China were among those hurt. Fire officials are still investigating the cause of the incident, which they believe was an accident. They suspect the explosion may have been caused by a mixture of air and concentrated combustible particles. The powder was meant to flash colors as part of a stage performance. The water park is closed and authorities are gathering evidence that could lead to charges of professional neglect or public endangerment against an event organizer and as many as 4 other people. The government has also ordered a ban on future use of colored theatrical powder at private events. Taiwan President Ma Ying-jeou visited victims at one Taipei hospital and pledged to fine the people responsible for the fire. Ralph Jennings, VOA News, Taipei.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
More than 1,000 people have died so far from extreme heat in southern Pakistan. The death toll continues to grow. The heat wave peaked Saturday when the high temperature reached 45 degrees Celsius in Karachi, but temperatures remain dangerously high despite some relief in the past few days. Slatika Hoke reports many Pakistanis blame the government for failing to prevent deaths.
Funerals were underway in Karachi on Friday for some of the victims of the scorching heat wave. The city is running out of burial space and personnel.
There is no formal gravedigger here because there is no space left. However, we have a small place here. The people who come here to bury their dead buy the cement blocks for graves. We charge for the labor.
Many people blame the government for an inadequate response.
More than 1,000 people have died in this city due to heat, scarcity of water, power outages. It is astonishing. Everyone from the federal government to Karachi Electric, they all are shameless.
City hospitals are overflowing with patients suffering from heat stroke, and the army has set up makeshift camps.
In the past 3 days, the hospital has admitted 5,000 heat stroke patients. We treated 250 to 300 people.
The government also has set up heat stroke prevention centers in Karachi and other regions of Sindh province.
Definitely, we have 173 roadside heat stroke care units established by health department in rural areas. We have the breakup of the figures in each district. We have 61 roadside camps of health department in Karachi.
Temperatures are beginning to drop, but they remained dangerously high throughout the week.
I was at home Thursday when the heat struck me. My body parts crumbled and I fell unconscious. I was taken to a hospital and they said it was heat stroke. Now I'm recovered and going home.
Monsoon rains expected in mid-July will bring much-needed relief. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
You can stop by our website, voanews.com, to see the video that accompanies this story. If you're looking for a new movie, there's one that looks at love and violence set against the background of the drug empire of Colombia's Pablo Escobar. David Byrd has this look at Escobar, Paradise Lost.
Depending on who you ask, former Colombian cocaine cartel leader Pablo Escobar was the devil incarnate, a man who cared for the downtrodden, or an international criminal. There's no denying that at one time, Escobar, known for his violent ways of handling those who opposed him, was one of the world's most wanted fugitives. His Medellin cartel shipped tons of cocaine to the United States and Europe before he was shot dead by Colombian security forces in 1993. In a new film, Escobar Paradise Lost, director Andrea DiStefano has Oscar-winning actor Benicio del Toro playing the former drug lord. At the film's premiere, DiStefano said he didn't want to portray Escobar as some kind of romantic anti-hero. He just wanted to tell a good story.
I was a story that was told to me and inspired me to write this film. I wasn't particularly in love with Pablo Escobar. It was just, I thought that was a story like that could make an interesting thriller, a movie I would like to go and see at the movie theater.
That story has a young surfer from Canada, Nick, played by Josh Hutcherson, who's best known as PETA in the Hunger Games franchise. He moves to Colombia with his older brother, where he falls in love with Pablo Escobar's niece, played by Claudia Trezac.
All of you foreigners, come here and think that you found paradise. What is this? What is wrong with it?
We do charity work for poor communities.
That's great. Who's we?
My uncle. I work for him.
Oh, Uncle Pablo.
Maria is like a daughter to me. Do you love her?
Yes, absolutely.
Benicio del Toro says that playing someone as notorious as Pablo Escobar was fascinating because he had to learn about the former drug lord to interpret the character.
A lot of the moments that he picked up Escobar were kind of like taking place in actual real moments that happened in his life. When he was running for office, opening a clinic, and like the first time Josh's character sees him, he's opening this clinic for the people, for the poor people. So there was all this stuff when he goes to jail at the end that is, he controlled that jail. at that moment.
Del Toro is no stranger to playing controversial men. He played Argentine guerrilla leader Ernesto Che Guevara in the 2008 biopic Che. For this film, the Oscar winner says that he learned that his character had many sides and wasn't just a gangster or a thug.
That was one of the things that I kind of like. So when we see Escobar, we see the truth, his love for his family. We see him as a family man. That's how Josh's character sees him. So there's truth to the character of Escobar.
Josh Hutcherson says that his character is an amalgamation of a historical person or persons, but the story did not really happen that way.
Nick wasn't a real character. There was a, I guess, there was some secondhand account of something that worked for Pablo, that there was like a pool guy that was kind of outside the circle that sort of got brought in that wasn't Colombian. So through that, I think Andrea found the inspiration for Nick, and then kind of used Nick as a metaphor for the Colombian people sort of being romanticized by Pablo and brought into this world in this beautiful way with the caring, loving side, and then just giving it to him.
Hutcherson's character has to make some difficult choices to keep his family safe, and he also doesn't know if Uncle Pablo is there to help him or to kill him. Escobar Paradise Lost is rated R for violence and for language. I'm David Byrd.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can always find us at voanews.com. We'd like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Zeynep Abdel-Rahman, and most of all you for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell joined U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Director Dan Ash, Acting Assistant Secretary of State Judith Garber, and other leaders on June 19th to destroy more than 1 ton of confiscated elephant ivory in New York's Times Square, sending a clear message that the United States will not tolerate wildlife crimes that threaten to wipe out the African elephant and a host of other species around the globe. The crush was conducted in partnership with the state of New York, the Wildlife Conservation Society, and New York State Senator Brad Hoylman. Secretary Jewell, who serves as co-chair with Secretary of State Kerry and Attorney General Lynch of the President's Task Force on Combating Wildlife Trafficking, joined Director Ash and thousands of onlookers who witnessed an industrial rock crusher, generously donated by Powerscreen, crush raw and carved ivory tusks and statues. Secretary Jewell said the ivory crush serves as a stark reminder to the rest of the world that the United States will not tolerate wildlife crimes, especially against iconic and endangered animals. The message is loud and clear. This administration will stop the poachers in their tracks, stop the profits, and work with our international partners to protect our global natural heritage. The Times Square ivory crush builds on momentum generated by the Fish and Wildlife Service's initial destruction of 6 tons of contraband ivory in November 2013. Since then, 9 governments have followed suit to destroy ivory. Campaigns to reduce demand for ivory, both domestically and overseas, and to strengthen international laws and enforcement, have further elevated the issue of wildlife trafficking globally. Regardless of their country of origin, we all lose if elephants, rhinos, tigers, and other iconic animals disappear. The only way we will save them is together through a concerted global effort to end the scourge of wildlife trafficking and the devastation it brings to these animals, said U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Director Dan Ash. The United States, he said, underscored its commitment to winning this fight, and we call on all nations to join us by destroying their confiscated ivory stockpiles, enacting and enforcing strong regulations protecting wildlife from illegal trade, and reducing demand.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.